हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थमाविर्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 11, chapter 2, part 2. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan, in his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, has tried to nullify this conclusion because he thinks that discrediting these so-called causes of the cosmic manifestation will nullify the entire Shankya philosophy. Materialistic philosophers accept matter to be the material and efficient cause of creation. For them, matter is the cause of every type of manifestation. Generally, they give the example of a water pot and clay. Clay is the cause of the water pot, but the clay can be found as both cause and effect. The water pot is the effect, and clay itself is the cause. But clay is visible everywhere. A tree is matter, but a tree produces fruit. Water is matter, but water flows. In this way, says the Shankyites, matter is the cause of movements and production. As such, matter can be considered the material and efficient cause of everything in the cosmic manifestation. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan has therefore enunciated the nature of pradan as follows. Right? So their idea is that pradan being able to create, and then they're showing how it can be both cause and effect, like clay. They're showing how the tree, though it's matter, it's producing fruit. And that water, though it is also matter and unconscious, it is flowing. They'll also say the trees are unconscious, but they're not. Just not so conscious. Right? Does that make sense? So, but we see the clay and the pot is unconscious, and those two connect. But what's left out is that the clay doesn't naturally turn into a pot. A potter has to do that. Right? So that's what's not brought, not noticed. Right? Yeah? No? Yeah. And that the tree, when it's conscious, therefore it's producing fruit. They're just saying it's unconscious. But it is conscious.
And when it is dead?
And then it produces no fruit. So that's the thing. There has to be consciousness. And then water flowing, that's only if there's a hill in that. Otherwise, on its own, it doesn't move around. Right? Right? Otherwise, you could probably start, you know, water races, right? You know, be at the track, everyone puts their bucket of water, different colors, and which one gets around the track first? No? Yeah. You know, much cheaper than greyhounds and horses and stuff, yeah. So, material nature is in... Okay, so this is Baladeva Vidyabhushan.
So the idea is to establish pradan is the efficient and the
material. Yeah.
And then that he is unconscious, but still he can produce everything.
Yes, and then if you... Yes, that's the whole point. But you don't see anything being produced without consciousness. Then they'll say, well, that's because Purusha and Prakriti, by proximity, then Purusha takes on the quality of Prakriti, being the enjoyer, as if being unconscious you can enjoy a whole lot. You know, it's just like those, you know, really drunk people in the drain, you know, like that, in the side of the road. They're really enjoying themselves there, you know. Or the next morning when someone wakes up, then they go, you know, what happened? What did we do? You know, you know. So somehow it's not seen, but they're taking as that. And then, so but the jiva takes on that from nature, which doesn't make any sense. And then the nature takes on consciousness from the jiva. But the whole point is this. We sit, let's say, how much time, let's say, does somebody sit in their chair? So do we ever see that chair become conscious? No. Yes. Otherwise, you go to sit and it moves, you know, all that kind of stuff, just for fun. So, It's not becoming conscious. Now, how is it that the whole material energy will become conscious because of the association of jiva, when we can't even make our chair conscious? Right? Like that. Or at least the refrigerator conscious, you know, so that's, you know, before we open the door, they tell them, no, sorry, the drinks are finished, you know, so then you don't even bother. But they don't do that. You know? That's the whole thing. It doesn't make any sense. So that's why he's saying that Baladeva Vibhushan can nullify the whole entire Shankya philosophy on this point. Because everything else is dependent upon this. And so if you remove this, then what do they have?
So when they say that Prakriti is eternal, and then Jiva with the proximity with the Prakriti, so even the Jiva becomes eternal in their philosophy.
That I haven't seen about that. I get the idea Purusha is always eternal anyway, but then the problem is then how does the Purusha come about? Because that means Prakriti has to produce Purusha, so how could unconscious produce conscious? And if Purusha is there separate, then where did Purusha come from? Then that brings up the thing, then who created Purusha and Prakriti? So it's at this point that their whole philosophy can't function. So by adjusting this, then all material philosophers, then you remove. Right? Does that make sense? Like yoga, they accept the Lord there and that. But they still will bring it back to this point, but they'll go a touch beyond. Right? Paramatma's there. Like that. The Karma Mimamsa also will go a bit beyond, but not significantly. Like that.
So now this is the core point.
Yes, this is the core point. You see, is that's also the points with the Maya bodies.
Yes.
But you see, is that generally when there's discussions, this is not the point of discussion. Because that's where their weakness is, right? Wherever your weakness is, you generally avoid that conversation.
No, actually, that means they are cheating themselves, you know.
But they want to be cheaters. They want to be cheated. It means you come to the material world not because it's something so fabulous, you come to get cheated.
And to cheat, to try to cheat.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like you go on cheaptravels.com. You're going on there to get cheated. You know, it's obvious.
But Maharaj, this is actually quite clever, this idea of proximity.
We're not saying that they're stupid, we're saying they're foolish. It's two different things. See, there's a lot of times you say, if you're smart, then everything's right. It doesn't mean that you're not. Just like I told you that story about the crazy guy and the... Remember that one? Some guy's driving down the road, and he gets a flat tire. And so he pulls over the side of the road. You know, there's a little wall there. And he starts, you know, jacks up the car, takes off the, you know, the bolts, the lug nuts, like that. Puts them in the hubcap, you know, so you don't lose them, but keeps it there on the road. And then starts doing. And then after some time, he notices that the wall, just, you know, behind the wall, because the wall's not so high, there's a guy standing there watching him. And then the guy says, you know that if you... And then he looks up and also sees that there's a sign there that says this is an insane asylum. Right? So he sees, okay, so this crazy guy's watching him. You know? So he doesn't think much of it. He's going about his business. At one point, the guy on the other side of the wall says, you know that, you know, you, it means that you put the lug nuts into the hubcap. That's nice, but if you keep it on the road, if another car comes by and hits that, then all the lug nuts will go flying all over, and then you may lose them, or, you know, you waste time trying to look for them. So if you slid it under the car, that would be, you know, better. And the guy's sitting there going, wow, that's so intelligent. And he looks at the guy and says, but how did you come up with that? You're in the insane asylum. And the guy says, I'm in here for being crazy, not stupid. Right? Yeah. So we're not saying that these philosophers are stupid. We're just saying they're foolish. They're crazy. That's the whole point. So much of the time is taken, if you're intelligent, then everything's perfect. You know, just like, let's say, if you're beautiful or you're wealthy or you're powerful, any of the opulences you have, then that's everything else is perfect. But in actuality, you can just have the karma that you have the one and not other things. So they can be very intelligently foolish, while let's say a muda is very unintelligently foolish, right? So they won't go to the same club or anything like that, you know, because you don't want to hang out with guys that are, you know, foolishly foolish. So being clever, then that's how someone is known as a, you know, a prominent philosopher. The philosophies that you give and you take it back to somebody's name, that means that guy is the clever one of all those fools. Right? So they're all smart, otherwise how do they understand the philosophy? But he's clever because he's worked out problems in the philosophy that the others can't. And the others can see how clever it is, so therefore then they take it. Right? Because it seems like it, you know, it's like that. You know, you have some let's say something colored liquid on the counter and you lean on it, then it goes on your cloth. And so you see by proximity you take it on. But what you don't, but it doesn't go the other way. It's not that now, you know, the counter then takes on the color of that or the juice takes on, no. So they'll take parts here because they want to say that Prakriti is the cause and effect. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to say it produces things and it has movement. Even though by definition, then pradhan means it has none of that. So then they'll use three different examples that don't actually connect together and aren't actually very, they're only taking part of the example. Right? Because here in the cause and effect, then they're taking the clay and the pot, but they're not taking that a potter was also involved in that process. It's not that the clay turned into a pot on its own. But when we use this Satkaryavad with Krishna, then the point is he is the one, he transforms, it is his desire, he does these things, therefore you see cause and effect. Right? Because of that personal aspect. But in clay itself, you can say, give the example of cause and effect so that you understand the concept, then you take it back to its personal and all that kind of thing. But they don't. They just leave it at that. You know, because the pot's unconscious, Prakriti's unconscious, so it's fine. Is that, so they have clever examples, otherwise why is it a philosophy? Why do they have a standing? Otherwise it would have been easily defeated before and it wouldn't have any standing. Right? But by the modes of nature, then Krishna has arranged for these six philosophies to be there. And all philosophies that there are based on these six. Not that they're a direct representative of them, you know, or a simplified representative. They'll have bits and pieces from here and there. So some may be more in this line, more in that line, or a bit from here and there. You know, how you say, mix and match, you know, like that. What's it, potpourri? Yes, like that. Take a little bit of here and there, you know, and mix it all together. So, but the materialistic, where the scientists, the analytical scientists, in their philosophy, then it goes back to material energy. It's created everything, and they don't believe in anything higher. Then you'll see that will be the common point between the Shankya and the modern science. So by defeating this point, it also defeats all the others. Because in the modern, they don't even go that far. They don't even go, they can't even say why it would happen. Here at least they're saying, because the jivas, their proximity becomes conscious, therefore then all this starts to happen. First they'll just say like this, it just produces. Then if someone questions, then they'll say by proximity, then the jiva and the consciousness, all this kind of jazz. But if you don't ask, they won't bring this up. But in the modern, it's like, what starts the whole thing? Where did any of this come from? It's just not even brought up. And if you ask, they'll probably have zero idea.
By chance.
By chance. That's their so-called cleverness. You know, that makes a, what do you mean, mathematical possibility so big it's not even, you know, probable.
Yeah.
You know, like would you invest in something that you have, you know, a 10 to the 100th power of actually getting your money back in? No, but they're investing in that. That means every atom, by chance, is all in perfect harmony that you have this whole creation. So that means we're talking fantasy here. That's the most fantasy thing of all. But, you know, so that's the whole thing, is you can be intelligent and foolish at the same time. So a good example is these materialistic philosophers. They're just...
They base their philosophy on the scriptures, but mm-hmm. they're very selective about it. So,
yes.
So can we say that it is kind of descending?
Is it kind of descending? But why would we need to... I mean, what's the point in saying it's kind of descending?
Because the modern scientists do not give any preference to Shabda at all, you know.
Well, that's there, but why do we have to say it's descending? Why do we have to establish that? We just say that they base their philosophies on scriptures. That's why they're agnostics. Right? Like that, because of that aspect. But we see in the philosophy itself, here, it's atheistic. Because it's against the Lord, though they accept the scriptures. And then modern scientists don't accept the scriptures either. But we don't need to bring in something else. You know? Like that. You know? Yeah. Okay, so then Baladeva Vidyabhushan has therefore enunciated the nature of pradan as follows. Material nature is inert, and as such it cannot be the cause of matter, neither as the material nor the efficient cause. Seeing the wonderful arrangement and management of the cosmic manifestation generally suggests that a living brain is behind this arrangement. For without a living brain, such an arrangement could not exist. One should not imagine that such an arrangement can exist without conscious direction. In our practical experience, we never see that inert bricks can themselves construct a big building. The example of the water pot cannot be accepted because a water pot has no perception of pleasure and distress. Such perception is within. Therefore, the covering body or the water pot cannot be synchronized with it. Right, because you're taking the water pot as it is, but the water pot itself is not conscious. So the point is the body, which has come from material nature, because that's different from Purusha. Right, Purusha is the soul. And then you have the body that's produced by material energy. But the point is the body is never experiencing pleasure and pain. Right, because that's supposedly then what you've gotten from the material energy. It's supposed to already have those qualities. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right? But the body can't, just like the pot can't. It's the soul that experiences it. Yes. So he's saying here you cannot synchronize these two examples. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they're talking about something different. They're not talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the material scientists suggest that trees grow from the earth automatically without assistance from a gardener, because that is a tendency of matter. They also consider the intuition of living creatures from birth to be material. But such material tendencies as bodily intuition cannot be accepted as independent, for they suggest the existence of a spirit soul within the body. Right? Because otherwise the animals would just, they're doing this on their own, so it's something that comes from matter. Because it has to be seen as that, even to today, the material scientists and that don't necessarily accept the concept of a soul. And so therefore the animals, then they're functioning without. Those who do accept souls, they don't accept animals have them. Right? So that's the difficulty, is that it's just whatever works for them is what they accept.
Right? It is even said that, I think about 120 years ago, it was not. It was said that the ladies have no soul.
Yes, yes, like that. So that they're just accepting that. Then it's just a matter of giving more time. Then maybe they'll accept that the animals will. You know. So that's the whole point. Is it's just they decide. It's not very scientific. So if that intuition, then we're saying is that for the bodily thing, it's intuition. And so if there's no soul, then what's the difference between a human body and an animal body? If it's just the modes of nature, it's just energy itself, then if it's just matter, then what's the big deal? What's the problem? How you deal? Why do you need etiquette? Why you need all this? Because if it's just matter, then you're not separate from matter.
So you can eat human.
Yeah, you can do anything you want, you know. And then why the funeral ceremony? Why all these different things? Because it's just matter going back to matter, which is normal. Right? You know, it's not like after you have, you know, cooked lunch and that, you take all the, you know, the peelings from the vegetables and all the, you know, whatever left over and take it out and put it back on the, compost pile. That then, you know, everyone stands around, there's a moment of silence, you know, because now, you know, the energy is going, you know, is transforming back into the another form of energy. And so, no. So then, yeah. Actually, neither the tree nor any other body of a living creature has any tendency or intuition. The tendency or intuition exists because the soul is present within the body. In this connection, the example of a car and driver may be given very profitably. The car has a tendency to turn right and left, but one cannot say that the car itself, as matter, turns right and left without the direction of a driver. A material car has neither tendencies nor intuitions independent of the intentions of the driver within the car. The same principle applies for the automatic growth of trees in the forest. The growth takes place because the soul is present with the tree. Right? As soon as the soul leaves, then it doesn't grow anymore. Right? That's it. Sometimes foolish people take it for granted that because scorpions are born from heaps of rice, the rice has produced the scorpions. The real fact, however, is that the mother scorpion lays eggs within the rice. By the proper fermentation of the rice, the eggs give birth to several baby scorpions, which in due course come out. This does not mean that the rice gives birth to the scorpions. Similarly, sometimes bugs are seen to come from dirty beds. This does not mean, however, that the beds give birth to the bugs, right? Even though they're called bed bugs. Right? That doesn't mean that the bed is giving birth to the bugs. I think you call them something, punes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, mommy.
Because I've heard Indra Dundamar say it so many times.
Especially in human.
He's really worried about these. You know. It is the living soul that comes forth, taking advantage of the dirty condition of the bed. Right? And it's dirty not on its own because people use it. So somebody, how to say, to some degree of conscious using the bed, but not conscious enough to keep it clean. So therefore, then, there are different kinds of living creatures. Some of them come from embryos, some from eggs, some from the fermentation of perspiration. Different living creatures have different sources of appearance, but one should not conclude that matter produces such living creatures. The example cited by materialists that trees automatically come from the earth follows the same principle. Taking advantage of a certain condition, a living entity comes from the earth. According to the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, every living being is forced by divine superintendence to take a certain type of body according to his past deeds. There are many varieties of bodies, and because of a divine arrangement, a living entity takes bodies of different shapes. Mm-hmm. When a person thinks, "I am doing this," the I does not refer to the body. It refers to something more than the body or within the body. As such, the body, as it is, has neither tendencies nor intuition. The tendencies and intuition belong to the soul within the body. Material scientists sometimes suggest that the tendency of male and female bodies cause their union, and that this is the cause of birth of the child. But since the Purusha, according to Shankya philosophy, is always unaffected, where does the tendency to give birth come from? Sometimes material scientists give the example that milk turns into curd automatically, and that distilled water pouring from the clouds falls down to earth, produces different kinds of trees, and enters different kinds of flowers and fruits with different fragrances and tastes. Therefore, they say, matter produces varieties of material things on its own. In reply to this argument, the same proposition of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the different kinds of living creatures are put into different kinds of bodies by the arrangement of a superior power. is repeated. Under superior superintendence, various souls, according to their past activities, are given the chance to take a particular type of body, such as that of a tree, animal, bird, or beast, and thus their different tendencies develop under these circumstances. The Bhagavad Gita 13.22 also further affirms, Purusha prakriti sto hi bhukte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasat yoni janmashu. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to the association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. The soul is given different types of bodies. For example, were souls not given varieties of trees' bodies, the different varieties of fruits and flowers could not be produced. Were souls not given, okay. Each class of tree produces a particular kind of fruit and flower. So based on this Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, is that by karma, then the living entities are taking birth in all these different species. So it's by higher arrangement. It's not that they're doing it. And therefore, then they have those natures, everything like that.
So, in the other philosophy, there is no question of karma.
In theirs, I'm sure that there's karmas there, but they're not. But I'm not sure where they haven't brought it up so far.
Yes.
But I would expect generally everybody following the Veda accepts karma, but it'll be from action and reaction. So therefore, all these things by what they do, then there's a reaction for that. But why there would be these laws? What would be the need of these laws? That then is a problem for explaining.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure they have a clever answer, but the point is that what would be the reason for it?
Yes.
You know? So that's the whole thing you get back, is what's the reason that material energy would want to produce creation? What would be the intent?
Yes.
Right? Because you have to be conscious, and then you have to have some purpose. So we don't see why would there be, but with the Lord, then we see that there's a reason. So, yeah. It is not that there is no distinction between the different classes. An individual tree does not produce flowers of different colors or fruits of different tastes. There are demarcated classes. As we find them among humans, animals, birds, and other species, there are innumerable living entities, and their activities, performed in the material world, according to different qualities of the material modes of nature, give them the chance to have different kinds of lives. Thus, one should understand that pradan, matter, cannot act unless impelled by a living creature. The materialistic theory that matter independently acts cannot, therefore, be accepted. Matter is called prakriti, which refers to female energy. A woman is prakriti, a female. A female cannot produce a child without the association of purush, a male. The purush causes the birth of a child because the man injects the soul, which is sheltered in the semen, into the womb of a woman. The woman, as the material cause, supplies the body of the soul. And as the efficient cause, she gives birth to the child. But although the woman appears to be the material and efficient cause of the birth of the child, originally the purusha, the male, is the cause of the child. Similarly, the material world gives rise to varieties of manifestations due to the entrance of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu within the universe. He is present not only within the universe, but within the bodies of all living creatures, as well as within the atom. We understand from the Brahma Samhita that the Supersoul is present within the universe, within the atom, and within the heart of every living creature. Therefore, the theory that matter is the cause of the entire cause of manifestation cannot be accepted by any man with sufficient knowledge or of matter and spirit. Materialists sometimes give the argument that as straw eaten by a cow produces milk automatically, so material nature under different circumstances produces varieties of manifestations. It's amazing how they come up with these examples. I mean, why would they? I mean, The straw is what's turning into the milk. What about the cow? You know, it's like, you know, the cows are famous for producing milk, not straw. You know, if I say, well, where does milk come from? Straw is not the first thing to come to mind. Right? Okay, so they say, so material nature under different circumstances produces varieties of manifestations. Thus, originally matter is the cause. In refuting this argument, we may say that an animal of the same species as the cow, namely the bull, also eats straw like the cow but does not produce milk. Under the circumstances, it cannot be said that straw, in connection with a particular species, produces milk. In conclusion, right, so in other words, they're limiting, so, but you can't be that when you make an argument, then it's not limited. Right? They're saying that when this particular species, you know, when they eat straw, it turns into milk. But within that same species, the bulls don't do that. Right? But if they say, no, but it's different. But the point is then what about the cow? If you're going to leave the cow out of the equation, you know, then you know, what's the problem? If you're just taking species, then that includes cows and bulls. If you want to be more specific, then you have to start looking at then it's the cow that's producing, it's not the straw. Right? Yeah. The conclusion should be that there is superior management, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:10, where the Lord says, Mayad yakshena prakriti suyate sachara charam. This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and non-moving beings. The Supreme Lord says, Mayad yakshena, under my superintendence. When he desires that the cow produce milk by eating straw, there is milk. And when he does not desire it, the mixture of such straw cannot produce milk. If the way of material nature had been that straw produced milk, a sack of straw could also produce milk. But that is not possible. I mean, that would be very lucrative, right? You just go out in the field, cut a bunch of grass, dry it, bundle it up, stick it on the shelf, and have the shelf so it collects things and pours into a pot, and then the next morning you can go to the market. Right?
Nowadays you have lots of varieties of milk. So many things.
Yeah, we won't get into that.
It's still called milk, almost straw. Maybe they are the colors of something.
They could be. They could very well be. Because you also see is that those guys who get into all those varieties of milk also in the argument actually neglect the position of the cow.
Yes.
So it's the same, could be, same philosophy.
Maybe those chunkheads that took first, yeah?
Yeah. They didn't make it in the philosophical field, so they thought they'd make it in, you know, another field. I always call it lifestyle. If the way of material nature had been that straw produced milk, a stack of straw could also produce milk. But that is not possible. And the same straw given to a human female also cannot produce milk. That is the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita statement that only under superior orders does anything take place. Matter itself has no power to produce independently. The conclusion, therefore, is that matter, which has no self-knowledge, cannot be the cause of material creation. The ultimate creator is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Because matter can't know itself. The soul can, because of consciousness. But matter can't, because what's unconscious can't know itself. If matter is accepted as the original cause of creation, all authorized scriptures in the world would be useless. For in every scripture, especially the Vedic scriptures like the Manusmriti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is said to be the ultimate creator. The Manusmriti is considered the highest Vedic direction to humanity. Manu is the giver of law to mankind. And in the Manusmriti is clearly stated that before the creation, the entire universal space was darkness, without information and without variety. and was in a state of complete suspension, like a dream. Everything was darkness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then entered the universal space, and although he is invisible, he created the visible cosmic manifestation. In the material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not manifested by his personal presence. Right? So that point from there, Manu, that's almost exactly word for word what Manu states. Mm-hmm. Like when you see when Prabhupada quotes Manu, he generally just gives it as it is.
Why do you say that Manu Smriti is considered the highest Vedic direction?
For humanity.
Not the Vedas itself.
No, the Vedas, but within that, the Manu Smriti is the highest direction for humanity. Mm-hmm. Because it's what a human does, what makes a human a human. But now the perfection of human life, then we'll see that's given in Srimad Bhagavatam. But how to be a human, then the highest scripture is the Manu. It's not that all the other scriptures aren't explaining that, but that knowledge is all brought together in one place so that we would know. Otherwise, unless you read the whole Veda, then you wouldn't have learned all these parts and whether you would put them all together yourself or not. You know, if you're really, really intelligent, you could. But the point is that's why then the Smriti Shastra is given, so that all that information is in one place, so that then you understand how to behave. Yeah. Yes?
Whereas this Manu Smriti is spoken by some particular Manu, or just, no, it's knowledge from all the Manus?
No, it's the knowledge given to Lord Brahma that he spoke to his 10 sons. And then when the sages inquired from Brahma about this knowledge, then Brahma opened the discussion, you know, and explained this part here that was just quoted. And then after having dealt with the creation, the primary creation, and the secondary, then when he gets down to actually applying it, then he hands the discussion over to his son, Bhrigu. And then he speaks the rest of the Samhita. So it's knowledge that comes from the original Manu, which means Vishnu, down to Brahma, who's Manu, and then for us, we're getting it from Swayambhuva Manu, who's one of his sons. So it's that same line. Right? So the knowledge that's there, that's what Swayambhuva gives to mankind. Right? But Brahma is also known as Swayambhuva. And Vishnu is also known as Swayambhuva. So when you say it's the knowledge of Swayambhu, then it means all of them.
Ultimately
it comes from Vishnu. Vishnu means Garbhodakshaya Vishnu spoke it to Lord Brahma while he's sitting on the lotus. Like that. So that knowledge then Brahma then gives to his sons who get, and we see that, so Bhrigu was speaking there, and that, in other places we see in the Bhagavatam, I think Swayambhuva Manu is speaking. But another major explanation is then in 7th canto with Narad Muni, because he's one of the 10 sons. So his explanation to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So when we see that Narad Muni explains it, he'll put more emphasis on the spiritual development. While when it's in Manu Samhita, when it's explained there, it'll put more on the human, you know, activities and knowledge and values. It'll point out the spiritual, but it won't put so much emphasis on it. But Narad Muni, then he'll put the majority of emphasis. Like he speaks 5 chapters on Varnashram, but most devotees would probably only count the first 2 as Varnashram. But the other 3 are what you're supposed to do with it. Like that. Does that make sense? Because it explains about the devotee and the consciousness and how the transcendental to the material energy and all that. So we wouldn't consider that to be technically part of the discussion. But that's actually what Varnashram is for. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not manifested by his personal presence. But the presence of the cosmic manifestation in different varieties is the proof that everything has been created under his direction. He entered the universe with all creative potencies, and thus he removed the darkness of the unlimited space. The form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described to be transcendental, very subtle, eternal, all-pervading, inconceivable, and therefore not manifested to the material senses of the conditioned living creature. He desired to expand himself into many living entities, and with such a desire he first created a vast expanse of water within the universal space, and then impregnated the water with living entities. By that process of impregnation, a massive body appeared, blazing like thousands of suns, and in that body was the first creative principle, Brahma. The great Parasara Muni has confirmed, right, because then that process of impregnation, then you have the Virat. Mm-hmm. And then from Virat you get Brahma. And then Brahma does the secondary creation. So up to that point, everything's part of the primary creation. Mm-hmm. Right? The great Parasara Rishi has confirmed this in the Vishnu Purana. He says that the cosmic manifestation visible to us is produced from Lord Vishnu and sustained under his protection. He is the principal maintainer and destroyer of the universal form. Right, so this universal form, that's Garbhodakshay Vishnu, but that's also Virat, right? Because it's Virat Rup. So from that combination of the masculine and feminine element, that produces all living entities. So it's known as the material form of the Lord, though the Lord's never material, so it's the transformation of his energies. Mm-hmm. Right? This cosmic manifestation is one of the diverse energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As a spider secretes saliva and weaves a web by its own movements, but at the end winds up the web within its body, so Lord Vishnu produces this cosmic manifestation from his transcendental body, and at the end winds it up within itself. All the great sages of the Vedic understanding have accepted that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original creator. Right? You can say, oh, but some don't accept. No, those are sages. The great sages, they've accepted. It is sometimes claimed that the impersonal speculations of great philosophers are meant for the advancement of knowledge without religious ritualistic principles. But the religious ritualistic principles are actually meant for the advancement of spiritual knowledge. Right? Because the jnanis will say it's just the knowledge is for spiritual development and all the aspects of karma are not. Right? That's just fruitive and that, so there's no connection of that to spiritual. You have to give that all up. Right? But then it's being pointed out here is no. That is, they're actually also meant, because everything coming from Krishna is meant for engagement in the service. By performance of religious rituals, one ultimately reaches the supreme goal by knowledge of understanding that Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. So when you perform rituals with that understanding, then it gives that transcendental effect. But if you perform that without that understanding, then it will give to that degree that you perfection, you perform the activity, it will give the material effect.
Yes.
Yeah? It is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita that even those who are advocates of knowledge alone, without any religious ritualistic process, advance the knowledge after many, many lifetimes of speculation, and thus come to the conclusion that Vasudeva is the supreme cause of everything that be. So if they continue the path, they'll come to that conclusion. But that's if they want to know. And if they don't, they'll get distracted. As a result of this achievement of the goal of life, such an advanced learned scholar or philosopher surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Religious ritualistic performances are actually meant to cleanse the contaminated mind in the material world. And a special feature of this age of Kali is that one can easily execute the process of cleansing the mind of contamination by chanting the holy names of God. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Means, do you notice this Prabhupada's going through here? He's explaining it, and just it sounds like just a nice language. But if you notice, he's just going from one shloka to the next. Does that make sense? Means, you know, there's that one about the great sages, then they come to the conclusion after many, many lifetimes that Vasudeva is the So then it says that he's quoting that one, right? Then he surrenders. Religious principles are actually meant to cleanse the contaminated mind of the material world. So then that you see is that in Gita, then Krishna is saying all these things are supposed to be done for him. Right? Then it goes into how that the only through the chanting of the holy name or through the Sankirtan movement, then there is that. And then that's the last sentence. Mm-hmm. See, Prabhupada just works with Shastra. Mm-hmm. But he puts it into language and weaves it together so we can understand it. Yes. Very special. Yes. A Vedic injunction states, Sarve Veda Yat Padam Amananti, Katha Upanishad 1:2:15. All Vedic knowledge is searching after the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, another Vedic injunction states, Narayana Para Veda. The Vedas are meant for understanding Narayana, the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the Bhagavad Gita also confirms, Vedaish cha sever aham eva vedyaha. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. By all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. Therefore, the main purpose of understanding the Vedas, performing Vedic sacrifices, and speculating on the Vedanta Sutra is to understand Krishna. Mm-hmm. Accepting the impersonalist view of voidness or the non-existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead negates all study of the Vedas, right? Because that's what the Vedas saying. So if you don't accept that, then what's the whole point? What do you gain by studying the Vedas?
Yes.
Mm. Impersonal speculation aims at disproving the conclusion of the Vedas. Therefore, any impersonal speculative presentation should be understood to be against the principles of the Vedas or standard scriptures. Right? So that means their philosophy is against the Vedic literature. Right? And their claim is they don't follow any of the rituals, they only follow the knowledge. But the knowledge aspect then is against actually the Vedic version. But if you look at it, they would still be classified, you know, as Hindus. Right? And followers of the Vedic version. Why? Because they follow the religious principles of a renunciate that's given in the Veda. So even though they're against the that you don't require the religious things, the only thing that actually connects them to the Veda in actuality is their practice of, you know, sannyas, or these kind of austerities and that they'll perform, their sadhana. Because philosophically, they're actually against the Veda. Because we have to remember, why would that be? Because they're quoting the Veda. Because their philosophy actually comes from Buddhism, which is not from the Veda. Right? So, in other words, one must be careful if one is going against the Veda, either philosophically or culturally or religiously, it's improper. So one has to be very, very careful about that. It's not a point for that you can play around with. You yourself can see whether you have the commitment to it or not, and you can inquire and study to be convinced or not. But there's no scope for bringing up points and philosophies that are opposed to the Veda. It's not part of the discussion. Not that it's not something that can't be discussed. You can establish that in that. But if you want to claim to be a follower of the Veda, then you have to accept Shabda is the authority. You know, before you've accepted that, analyze, study, see if you accept that. If you do, but once you do, then you have to move with that. Right? Because the Veda is perfect. It's coming from Krishna. Does that make sense? Otherwise, sometimes, you know, you'll find individuals accept the philosophy, but then be opposed to the religion. Or they'll accept the religion, but not the philosophy. You know, so Prabhupada says, those who accept the philosophy without the religion, they'll speculate. And those who accept the religion without the philosophy, they'll be sentimental. Right? And you can directly see that if that's what's going on.
Right? Yeah. Can we say that the first principle in the Veda is to accept the principle of authority?
Yes, you have to.
There is no other option, we can say.
No?
No other option.
No, because otherwise how will you know? Because if all we have is the material mind and senses to work with, and they're produced from material energy, how will we actually know what's beyond that? How we know what the soul is, how can we know who's the actual creator of all this? You can say, no, but with this I can study what's here. But you won't know what the purpose is. You know? Does that make sense? So that without knowing the purpose, it becomes... I remember seeing something, some pictures. I think it was maybe Mahendra Daro. Is that how you say it?
Mahendra
Daro. So they have so many things that they find from there, yes, right? Yes. In doing their research work. But, you know, being Western scholars and Western lifestyle and having zero understanding of the Indians, so either they're just, yeah, they're Indologists that it's not about India, or they're just anthropologists or whatever. So I remember seeing many of these things that were just standard kitchen paraphernalia that you see today in India, that they're speculating what it is. They have no idea what it is, you know, because their ideas, you always have to give this far out kind of thing what it was, and that, and then we've developed into some modern thing and that so much better. So it was some ancient old kind of, so the speculations of what they were trying to attribute to some of this kitchen paraphernalia, they don't even know it's kitchen paraphernalia. They just know in one room they found these things. Because how many things you're going to find, right? You're probably not going to find a potato or something, right? You know, like that. And some other things may, you know, go away. But let's say like the stone slab, you know, the things and the rock thing that you grind with. Now, that's most likely not going to go away with time. Right? You know, you keep that in your kitchen. It gets buried. After a million years, they dig it up. It will be there. Yeah, and in good shape, you know. So then I don't even remember what it was. It was just so funny. They can't even understand what it is. Right? So by speculation, if you don't understand the religion, it's unlimited what you can speculate. But if you understand the religion, then what's to, you accept that, then you know how you apply the philosophy. Because philosophy is general principle, you have to apply it into a detail. So the religion is what details are recommended. Mm-hmm. Right? Means that's why Manu is, you know, that you know, considered the top literature for explaining how humans apply the Vedic philosophy. Because if you don't use that, then how you're applying it may not be human. It may be, you know, something else, some other species. And so then in the future one will take birth in that species, since that's your proclivity. So you have to have that. Or if you just have the rituals but you don't know actually what they're for, so then they'll just be sentiment. Right? You know that they're good, they give a good result, but that's all. So you just do them because they'll give a good result. But what that result is, you don't really know. So you have to have both. Okay. By all the Vedic simile, the Bhagavad Gita confirms, Vedais chasavaraham eva vedyaha. By all the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. Therefore, the main purpose of understanding the Vedas, performing Vedic sacrifices, and speculating in the Vedanta Sutras to understand Krishna. That's the point. Accepting the impersonal point of view, avoidance of the non-existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead negates all study of the Vedas. Personal speculation aims at disproving the conclusion of the Vedas. Therefore, any impersonal speculative presentation should be understood to be against the principles of Vedas or standard scriptures. Since the speculation of impersonalists does not follow the principles of the Vedas, their conclusion must be considered to be against the Vedic principles. Anything not supported by the Vedic principles must be considered imaginary and lacking in standard proof. Right? Because otherwise, we saw before, Baladeva Dibhushan was making the point of that you have these great materialists, and people are so impressed by these great materialists, and we'll take them as authority. So if we're taking them as authority over a Vedic principle, you know, something the scripture says, then that means we're going against the Vedic authority. And so why would we be taking the authority of someone who is temporary, not realized, doesn't understand they're not the body, right? Is absorbed in sense gratification. Why would we take their authority over someone, over the Veda? Since the Veda can reveal Krishna and this great materialist cannot. Right? So there has to be some material motive behind that, something materially for us to gain by such an acceptance of a philosophy. Otherwise, you don't accept the materialist unless you want materialism. Right? Show me sense? Yeah. Therefore, no impersonalist explanation of any Vedic literature can be accepted. And you can say, no, but parts of it are okay, because that's given, that's standard what we do, but then why do we need to get it from them? We just get it from ourselves. Right? Yeah. If one tries to nullify the conclusions of the Vedas by accepting an unauthorized scripture, or so-called scripture, it will be very hard for him to come to the right conclusion about the absolute truth. The system for adjusting two contradictory scriptures is to refer to the Vedas, for references from the Vedas are accepted as final judgments. When we refer to a particular scripture, it must be authorized, and for this authority, it must strictly follow the Vedic injunctions. If someone presents an alternative doctrine he himself has manufactured. Oh, down here, I was thinking. That he has manufactured Bhagavatam, first reverence, I was thinking. Okay. That doctrine will prove itself useless. For any doctrine that tries to prove that Vedic evidence is meaningless immediately proves itself meaningless. The followers of the Vedas unanimously accept the authority of Manu and Parasara in the specific succession. Their statements, however, do not support the atheistic Kapila, because the Kapila mentioned in the Vedas is a different Kapila, the son of Kardama and Devahuti. The atheist Kapila is a descendant of the dynasty of Agni and is one of the conditioned souls. But the Kapila, who is the son of Kardama Muni, is accepted as an incarnation of Vasudeva. The Padma Puran gives evidence that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, takes birth in the incarnation of Kapila. And, by his expansion of theistic Shankya philosophy, teaches all the demigods and a brahmana of the name Asuri. In the doctrine of the atheist Kapila, there are many statements directly against the Vedic principles. The atheist Kapila does not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says that the living entity is himself the Supreme Lord, right? So when they talk about Purusha, they take anything in the Veda that's talking about Purusha and attribute that to the soul. Right? So even if they say, then Purusha, glanced or this or that, it's all the soul is doing. So by association, by proximity, then Pradhan takes on all these qualities. Right? But the soul does nothing, so therefore they're not doing the creation. That means then the Pradhan must be doing the creation. Right? It's just like, the husband, he's not producing the baby. Right? The direct material and efficient cause is the mother. Right, but the point is that the whole process is started by the father, so that they don't know how to deal with these things, because they're trying to attribute the supreme soul and the living entity as one entity, so then they can't deal with that. He says that the living entity is himself the supreme lord, and that no one is greater than him, meaning the soul. His conceptions of so-called conditioned and liberated life are materialistic, and refuses to accept the importance of immortal time. All such statements are against the principles of the Vedanta Sutra. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 6:14-15. So, Bhagavatam verse reference. 3:27. So we see it's in here that you are dealing with the scientists. But that means if we're accepting the scientists and their philosophies and then want to apply that in Krishna consciousness at the expense of the Vedic authority, it's the same principle. And so what becomes the actual authority is our mind. Right? So how is that in any way spiritual? And we can't say it's Yukta Vairagya and all these different kinds of things. Because yukta means connected to Krishna, and vairagya means without attachment on your part. But the reason that we're accepting it is because of our own attachment. Right? So that's it. And then we say, no, but see, so many people will come, and it will be very popular, but then popularity is important to us. The Veda is not saying popularity is important. Right? That's the Ionians. They're the ones who say popularity is important. Right? So that's the whole thing. It's all coming. We're still using our own authority to establish the authority. And that authority is against the Vedic. So that those things you can't use. It's improper.
Yeah, you can say that the Vedanta Sutra is helping us to defeat all these false conceptions.
Yes.
And to focus on the real meaning of the Veda.
Yes. That's the whole idea. Because that's why the Bhagavatam is a natural commentary. Because the Vedanta Sutra is saying this, but what's the purpose of doing that? Removing all these improper things and impurity. Develop that understanding of the Lord, surrender to the Lord, and there, develop that devotion and knowledge of the Lord and detach it from the material world. So we're trying to gain that. Otherwise, if we're not doing that, then we're dealing with goodness, passion, ignorance, then it's happiness, distress, and illusion. Right? If not, then it is that, knowledge about the Supreme Lord, what was the other? Knowledge of the Supreme Lord, devotion. What was the third one?
Yes.
You know, it's the origin of what the modes of nature do.
Yes.
You know, the spiritual. Yeah, okay.
Tomorrow is a combination to study Vedanta Sutra and Bhagavatam. It's supposed to make us very clear.
Yes, that's the whole idea. Because from studying Bhagavatam, because of the Puranic presentation, we may not focus or take note of the analytical aspect. So then, without knowing that philosophy, you may accept things sentimentally, which, if we have that full surrender, is not a problem.
Yes.
But if we don't have that full surrender, we maintain material attachments, then that lack of analytical ability, then we may get distracted and accept so many mundane aspects and consider them valid. Right? So then that's the thing that what's trying to be removed here. So it just makes one aware of that analytical process. And you see that Prabhupada, Baladeva Vibhushan here, especially in this purport, and Lord Chaitanya himself, Bhakti, all the acharyas, then they are very able to function in that analytical understanding. That's they will give answers to materialists through that medium. But it's based on that surrender and faith in Krishna that they actually have the knowledge that, you know, the understanding of Krishna that you can express through an analytical presentation. It's not by analytics they understand Krishna. That's not going to happen. Krishna reveals himself to the one with that appropriate devotion. Then they're able to present it analytically for those who don't accept the Vedic literatures. You know, or even if those who do, but they come up with the wrong conclusion because of material distraction.
Yes.
Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:27:18. As there is no separate existence of the earth and its aroma, or of water and its taste, there cannot be any separate existence of intelligence and consciousness. Right? Because conscious means you're conscious of things. So what does that mean? You're conscious, you're able to tell the difference between what's similar and what's different. Because that's the function you could say the mechanical binary function that the intelligence does. It tells what's the same and what's different. Right? And that's all it does. Like the mind, all it does is reject something or accept something. That's its binary function. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
It's not very romantic.
No, it's not. It's not. But then how they're combined, you know, then with the ego, you know, and that all these things combined together, that particular level of consciousness, then you have this whole mechanical process that goes on. So then it becomes a little bit more. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:1-11. O great king, O supreme personality of God. So, intelligence and consciousness. So if you're not conscious, you can't be intelligent. Unless there's intelligence, how is anything created? So the material nature, just by accident or by some reason is doing, it can't make sense. It has to be through intelligence. That means you have to be conscious. So that's the connection here. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.11. O great king, the supreme personality of Godhead, the controller of the material and spiritual energies, who is certainly the creator of the entire cosmos, creates the time factor to allow the material energy and the living entity to act within the limits of time. Thus, the Supreme Personality is never under the time factor nor under the material energy. So he's beyond. But by creating the time factor, then we see material nature and the living entities can function within that, because the transformations that happen are happening from time. Right? In the spiritual world, it's not time. I said time doesn't control. Time and space don't control the spiritual world. Like that. They feature there as assistants, but here in the material world, time controls everything. Mm-hmm. So it's by time anything moves. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that was the whole thing, is no, material energy itself has movement, like water has movement. No, it's time that creates movement. So material energy appears, so water appears to be moving because of the time factor, not because of material energy. Does that make sense? It means material energy, because it's not the source of time, it doesn't move. So it's only when you add time, then there's movement. Like when Krishna glances, there's the jivas, there's the false ego, and there's time. That's why it starts moving. We see the Shankyites, then they add ego after. They only start ego when you come to the gross element of ego. Right? Because of the eight elements, then it's the subtlest. So it'll be the first. From the ego, then will come the intelligence, then like that, and it'll go down like that. And so they'll start there, but ego is already there before. Because the avidya potency is there before the material energy. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that ignorance is not one of the qualities of the material energy. There is the mode of ignorance. But it's actually, the potency of this is coming from before. So you can see, you transform knowledge of the Lord into ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? The devotional activities and all that, then, into the material desire, and then distress, and then the last one has to be with goodness and knowledge, detachment from the material energy, like that. I think that's the last one. And so therefore, with that detachment, you're performing your duties. That's why in the Vedic, the mode of goodness means you know your duties, but you're not attached to the results. And so you can perform that. That will liberate you. Right, and then if we give up passion, ignorance, or material, that desire for those things, and the desire to enjoy, and ignorance, then when it comes to one can function on the transcendental platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can we say that the creation takes place when the jivas, they desire due to false ego, and then the time pushes it?
Means we're giving this kind of linear explanation just so that you can see how you're involved. But in actuality, all this has been going on eternally. Right? So, that the living entity, the tatastha shakti by nature means that they can choose to serve Krishna or not. So that means it's inherent that there's going to be those who don't. And for those who don't, then you need a situation that matches an environment that the soul can relate to. In other words, it should look like the spiritual world, basically mechanically function like the spiritual world, but not be the spiritual world. Because the spiritual world is conscious. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say you're driving down the road, and you're driving nicely, you're doing everything nicely, and the car is conscious. So is there going to be a problem? Will be a problem?
The car is conscious?
I'm saying, if the car were conscious. You're driving properly, you're falling, the car's happy. Now, what happens if you're doing something crazy and all that? Will the car be happy? You know, these things like that. You know how to drive and that. You call that shifting gears? And it says, you know, like that. My grandmother could do better than that. You know, so it's just, that's what you're going to be hearing the whole time. So that's why then the living entity that turns away from Krishna is not functioning in the spiritual realm, because everything being conscious, they wouldn't like to be dealt with improperly. Right? So therefore, they have to be given the material energy, which is unconscious, which doesn't complain. Does that make sense? So you have to have something similar. So all that's inherent in Krishna. Because that means that for the jiva to be tatasta means there has to be an external energy. And jivas then, because they can choose, there will be those who don't choose Krishna. So it's all inherent already going on. Right? But our involvement in it is when we desire to do something separate from Krishna. Then we're brought into the material world. And then, according to what our particular inclinations and tastes are, that's then our endeavors will make. And according to that, that then develops our whole point of karma. But karma is produced because of desire. Desire is not produced by the material energy. It's produced in the living entity before they come into material energy. Therefore, it's a nadi. And you can also say material energy is a nadi because it's always been there. But even before we came into it. It's not that once we came in, now it became glorious. And then when we go, then who cares? You know, it's still the same.
We are not the center.
No, it's a strange, isn't it? Uh-huh.
There's a mistake somewhere.
Yeah, we should check that out, you know. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:15:27. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the master of all other living entities and of the material nature. His lotus feet are sought and worshipped by great saintly persons like Vyas. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being. Right? So here we're saying is that those who are intelligent, then they'll worship the Lord. And those who are foolish, then they'll consider him ordinary and won't. But they didn't say stupid, they said foolish. Right? Because we'll take it fool and stupid are synonyms. They can be, but they're not necessarily. That has to be understood that you can be a fool in a very intelligent way. You know? So yeah.
Maharaj, when Srila Prabhupada is saying sometimes fools and rascals.
Yes. Well, I mean that covers the whole spectrum. Right? Because then you can mean that would, you could either take that as fools meaning not so intelligent and rascals meaning they are intelligent or clever. But in any case, the fool is what they are and rascal is then what they do with their foolishness. So then, you know, some are more foolish, some are more rascally. You know.
But in order to come to this world, we need to be foolish.
We're foolish because we have the opportunity to serve Krishna, but we don't take it. That's foolish. Yes. So that means in the material world, everyone's a fool, everyone's in ignorance. Yes. So everyone's controlled by the avidya potency, and everyone's foolish because they're happy with that.
Yes.
Yeah. So then one's supposed to understand one shouldn't be happy with that. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.